Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to natural resource wealth, Africa is an economic powerhouse. 30% of the world's mineral reserves can be found in Africa. It also has 40% of the world's gold, up to 90% of its chromium and platinum, and 65% of the world's arable land. Unfortunately, a history of colonial rule has made it challenging for nations in Africa to effectively leverage their great resource wealth. Colonialism has left African countries with damaged political institutions, haphazardly drawn national borders, and a trade model that depends on exporting their resources to large conglomerates rather than using the minerals for themselves to develop their economies. This issue is so complex that one of our EE team members has been researching this particular topic and its developments full-time for the past 3 months. So it didn't feel right for me to take the credit for this video, and I wanted to give them a chance to teach you all about it for themselves.
Thanks for the introduction, Michael. The problems facing Africa are complex, and we certainly won't try to explain them all in a 15-minute YouTube video. Instead, we can focus on the unique way that some countries are trying to fix the trade model that's a relic of the colonial era. But to understand how, we have to go back. About 2 months back, depending on when this video gets published.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
In December 2022, Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, announced that his government would be banning exports of raw lithium ore without written consent. An export ban might seem like a funny policy. Why would a government intentionally prevent certain sectors from selling their products to the rest of the world? In fact, export restrictions are more common than you might think. From the beginning of 2022 to June of that year, 34 countries imposed export restrictions on food and fertilizers. The restrictions were in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the two countries which accounted for roughly 30% of the world's wheat production. Russia and Ukraine are also significant exporters of different seeds, honey, corn, and fertilizers. Export restrictions were also common during the height of the COVID pandemic. According to a report released from the World Trade Organization, 85 countries placed some form of export restriction on all sorts of medical supplies. Two countries even placed export restrictions on toilet paper. But export restrictions are not just for hoarding critical supplies. They can also be used to bolster certain sectors at the expense of others. This is partly why Zimbabwe is banning lithium exports. The hope is that a ban on exporting raw lithium ore will attract high-value processing and manufacturing plants to Zimbabwe. The workers of these plants would then reinvest their relatively high wages back into the economy. But a ban on exports isn't without its consequences. Remember the food restrictions I mentioned earlier? The restrictions placed on food and fertilizer exports shrunk the supply of those products trading in the global market. The contraction in the supply of food and fertilizers forced the price that was charged for those goods in global markets to go up. In May, just several months after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, global food prices increased by roughly 40% relative to the previous year, the largest increase in a decade. The situation is so bad that many global organizations, from the International Monetary Fund to the World Bank, are warning of a food crisis. Some analysts worry that Zimbabwe's ban on exporting raw lithium ore may have a similar impact on global lithium prices. For instance, the price for a metric ton of lithium carbonate sold to the United States has increased from roughly $5,000 in 2010 to $17,000 in 2021. And while Zimbabwe is not a significant exporter of lithium, it does have one of the largest lithium reserves in the world, and the largest lithium reserve in Africa. In this video, we'll answer the following questions. First, why is lithium so important? Second, what is the state of Zimbabwe's mining industry? Third, how likely is Zimbabwe's export ban to benefit its economy? And finally, should we be worried that Zimbabwe's ban on raw lithium exports will distort global lithium prices? Why is lithium so important? From 2011 to 2016, the global production of lithium averaged less than 35,000 metric tons. Then, from 2017 to 2021, lithium production averaged close to 85,000 metric tons. What explains this large increase? In 2015, 196 states from across the globe joined a legally binding treaty to limit global warming to below 2 degrees Celsius, and preferably to below 1.5 degrees Celsius relative to pre-industrial levels by 2050. The Paris Agreement requires countries to submit their plans for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. These plans are called Nationally Determined Contributions, or NDCs. To meet their emissions reduction goals, countries need to lower emissions across all sectors of their economy. According to data collected from the World Resources Institute and Climate Watch, 12% of global greenhouse gas emissions come from road transportation. That's equivalent to roughly 6 billion tons of carbon dioxide being pushed into the atmosphere from cars, motorcycles, buses, and trucks. Any plan to fight global warming that excludes the electrification of the transportation sector is likely to fail. It's unsurprising, then, that 76% of the submitted NDCs propose some form of mitigation measure. Enter electric vehicles. Fully electric vehicles have a lower carbon footprint than traditional gasoline-powered vehicles, even after accounting for battery manufacturing and the electricity used for charging the vehicle. Many countries have crafted policies to incentivize consumers to purchase electric vehicles over the more conventional gas-powered alternatives. For instance, the Ministry of Environment in Romania provides a 10,000 euro subsidy for fully electric vehicles and a 4,500 euro subsidy for plug-in hybrids. And these types of incentives are working. Sales of electric vehicles have increased every year since 2010, and the International Energy Agency projects global sales of electric vehicles will surpass 175 million by 2030. With the growing demand for electric vehicles, car manufacturers need a reliable power source. It just so happens that lithium is the lightest metal on the periodic table. It also has a high energy density. These qualities are what make lithium so attractive to car manufacturers. Their light weight means that the cars they power don't have to spend a lot of energy to travel with them, but their high energy density also means they can maintain a charge for a long time. The fact that lithium-ion batteries are also cheaper than some alternatives makes them a favorite among car manufacturers. What is the state of Zimbabwe's mining industry today? The World Bank classifies Zimbabwe as a lower-middle-income country. As of 2021, its GDP per capita stands at just under $1,300, less than the $1,600 made in sub-Saharan Africa as a whole. The bright spot in Zimbabwe's economy has been its mining sector, which accounts for roughly 12% of its GDP. But the issue is that smuggling is a common problem. According to the Ministry of Finance, Zimbabwe loses close to $2 billion worth of minerals through illegal channels. While gold is the darling of mineral smugglers, lithium is smuggled as well. Part of the reason why mineral theft is so prevalent in Zimbabwe is because the people who work in those sectors are paid poorly to begin with. Last year, the Associated Mine Workers Union of Zimbabwe and Zimbabwe's Chamber of Mines negotiated two salary hikes for miners, one in May and another in August. The first hike was a hike of more than 100%, which would see the salary of the lowest paid miner go from 44.64 Zimbabwean dollars to 93.07 Zimbabwean dollars per month. The second hike saw salaries increase by roughly 78%, which would see the lowest paid miners earn roughly 166 Zimbabwean dollars per month. At first, these salary hikes seem more than generous. If unions in the United States or Australia could negotiate more than 100% salary increases, there would no longer be a need for unions. And yet, just 2 days after the first salary hike, the General Secretary of the Zimbabwe Diamond and Allied Minerals Workers Union blasted the salary hike as double nonsense. After the second salary hike, the General Secretary of the Solidarity Mine Workers Union of Zimbabwe argued that the miners in Zimbabwe were making slave wages. Now, before you think that these unions are just greedy gold diggers, I should note that Zimbabwe has a long history of high inflation. Between 2008 and 2009, inflation in Zimbabwe got so bad that the government stopped providing statistics for it. But researchers estimate that Zimbabwe's month-to-month inflation by November 2008 peaked at almost 80 billion%. This made the local currency effectively worthless. In response, the government replaced the Zimbabwean currency with the US dollar. The safety of the US dollar helped quell inflation in Zimbabwe until 2018, when a new currency was introduced. Unfortunately, the introduction of the new currency restarted the high inflationary events that Zimbabwe had suffered from just a few years earlier. In 2020, annual inflation in Zimbabwe reached almost 600%. And while inflation in 2021 is much lower than it was the previous year, it's still at roughly 100%. It also doesn't help that inflation in Zimbabwe is getting worse, not better. Analysts predict that inflation will rise to 400% by the end of 2023, effectively wiping out the salary hike that miners received the previous year. But it's not just miners in Zimbabwe that have low incomes. In 2019, 40% of Zimbabwe's population lived on less than $2.15 a day after adjusting for purchasing power. This is higher than the average in sub-Saharan Africa as a whole, where about 35% of the population lived on less than $2.15 a day. A low income leads to low levels of consumption and investment. It also means that a government has a small tax base to draw from to grow their economy. This is partly why inflation in Zimbabwe has been so high. With very little tax revenue, the government relies on money printing to fund its expenses. These disadvantages explain why Zimbabwe's government wants to attract more processing plants. Jobs in mineral processing and battery manufacturing tend to offer better wages than jobs in mining due to a difference in skill requirements. A higher household salary would lead to larger household consumption, which would increase the revenue that goes to companies. The companies would then reinvest this extra profit into more workers and better equipment to maintain their market share. Higher household salary and firm revenue would also increase the taxes sent to the government. This gives the government more money to spend on infrastructure projects such as railways, which households and firms can use to generate even more money. In short, higher household income creates a kind of feedback loop that positively impacts economic growth. Will Zimbabwe's ban on lithium benefit its economy? Relying on commodity exports for economic growth has two problems. First, a country that relies on commodity exports will be subjected to the extreme highs and lows of commodity prices. When commodity prices go up, the economy performs well. When commodity prices fall, the economy performs poorly. We've seen this play out many times with oil-exporting countries. Take Venezuela, for instance. In the mid-1970s, there was a five-month OPEC-backed oil embargo on countries supporting Israel in the Yom Kippur War. This boosted oil prices and made Venezuela the wealthiest country in Latin America. But a decade later, when oil prices fell, Venezuela's economy was in free fall, and by the end of the decade, the IMF had to bail the country out. The second issue with depending on commodity exports is that it restricts a country's influence in global trade. Between 2010 and 2020, most trade in goods has come from the manufacturing sector. According to data from the United Nations, the manufacturing sector contributed roughly $13.5 trillion to global trade. The agricultural sector and the natural resources sector combined contributed less than half of that. So how might the ban on exporting raw lithium ore solve these issues? When a country exports anything, they do so because they have produced more than what is demanded domestically, so they sell the excess to consumers in other countries. Admittedly, this is a highly simplified view of global trade, but it helps us put Zimbabwe's ban on lithium exports in perspective. If a country exports goods because they produce more than what is needed at home, then a ban on exports would cause an oversupply of that good domestically. The glut of supply would then bring prices down. In Zimbabwe's case, the ban on exports of raw lithium ore should create a glut of lithium, which will lower its domestic price. While this is bad news for lithium mines that now have to sell their products at a discount, it's great news for the lithium processing plants and the battery manufacturing plants that buy lithium. Not only can these firms now purchase lithium at a discount, but they can also pass on these savings to consumers, which will make their products more competitive in the global market. Zimbabwe also benefits because it means that they'll be less reliant on mineral exports, which are only a fraction of global trade. Workers may benefit as well because companies will need to pay a competitive salary to attract the talented labor needed to manufacture batteries or process raw lithium ore. With that said, export restrictions have some major caveats. First, they only work if the country that imposes the restrictions has a large capacity for higher value processes. And Zimbabwe does seem to be positioning itself for just that. Recently, the government signed a contract with two Chinese investors, Hong Kong Eagle International Investment Holdings and Pacific Gold Investment, to construct a $3 billion battery metals processing facility. Zimbabwe has also signed an agreement with Tangshan Holdings Group to establish lithium mining and processing operations inside the country. The second caveat with export restrictions is that the companies hardest hit by the restrictions need to still be able and willing to provide the product at a discount to the domestic economy. So when the export-dependent companies are barred from selling their goods to the world, they scale back production in response to diminishing profits. And if profits turn to losses, they may close their doors forever. Under normal circumstances, we would expect the government to step in to support these critically important sectors, but Zimbabwe's history of hyperinflation will make any support challenging. When Zimbabwe banned the exports of raw chromium ore in 2007, and again in 2011, for instance, researchers at the OECD found that the ban did not improve the competitiveness of those companies that process raw chromium ore. Still, what Zimbabwe has going for it today that it arguably lacked in 2011 is a strong capacity for refining raw lithium ore into higher value products due to the significant investments from Chinese firms. If Zimbabwe's mining sector can supply these firms with lithium ore at competitive prices, then Zimbabwe might take the first step toward becoming a middle-income country. Should we be worried that Zimbabwe's ban on lithium exports will distort global lithium prices? Higher lithium prices would be good for the large exporters of lithium ore and bad for everyone else. Not only would electric vehicles become more expensive, but car manufacturers might switch to other, less dependable batteries to cut costs, and reduction in quality might turn consumers off from electric vehicles entirely. But we likely don't have to worry about Zimbabwe's ban on lithium exports inflating prices too much. Australia and Chile are the largest producers of lithium today, accounting for more than 75% of global lithium production. And yes, while Zimbabwe does have one of the largest lithium reserves in the world and the largest in Africa, its massive reserves are nowhere close to what's available in other parts of the world. More than 90% of global lithium reserves are located in just four countries: Chile, Australia, Argentina, and China. Zimbabwe's ban on lithium exports is likely to have just a small effect on global lithium prices, if it has any effect at all. For many decades, countries in Africa have received the short end of the stick when it comes to economic growth. And while living conditions in Africa have improved over the years, the continent still has a long way to go before it overcomes the hardships placed upon it by its former colonial overlords. An export ban is just one such tool that countries have at their disposal to make this transition easier. Granted, an outright ban is a blunt tool, but there are less severe types of export restrictions that countries can consider. For instance, many countries in Africa place export taxes on coffee, oils, and tobacco. Zimbabwe's ban on lithium exports is one attempt to shake off the lingering economic effects of the colonial era. Whether the country will be successful or not in this endeavor remains to be seen. What can be said with some certainty, however, is that many economists will be watching Zimbabwe very closely over the next few years. Thanks so much for watching this video, and if you liked it, please hit that like button and subscribe to see more content. You can also hit the notification bell to be notified whenever we post a new video.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.